This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
So wait until it's 7. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والحمد لله رب العالمين اللهم صل وسلم وبارك على سيدنا محمد وعلى اله وصحبه اجمعين. Before we continue, like last time, I want to give an example at the beginning just to kind of help everyone understand stuff. Today I'm going to teach something called المسألة العمرية. There's two مسائل that are called المسألتان العمريتان. These are مسائل that عمر الخطاب رضي الله عنه gave a fatwa in during his early days as a judge because they were kind of different. I mean, the way that he gave the fatwa may change things a bit in terms of how we understand mawarith. And this is what the condition was. A lady died, and she left a husband, a mother, and a father. Okay? So a lady died, she leaves. I hope you guys remember how we do this. She leaves a husband, zawj. A mother. Who are the people who always inherit? Kids, right? So he has no kids, she has no kids, she just has spouse and parents, so they definitely are going to all inherit, right? And father. Does she need an asaba? Does she need a universal inheritor, or is there one here? The father's a universal inheritor, so there's no son, but there's a father, so we don't need anyone else. What this means is we don't need to ask about other family members. You ask about other family members if you don't have a asaba, if you don't have someone who's a universal inheritor. So you look, first of all, for the five people who inherit all the time, spouses, parents, and children. Okay, you got them all down. And amongst these spouses, parents and children, there's no asaba, there's no universal inheritor, there's no son and there's no father. Then you start asking, okay, does the deceased have a grandfather? Does the deceased have a grandson? Does he have a full brother or paternal brother? Looking for an asaba, looking for a universal inheritor. But here we don't need, because we have the five, we asked about the five people who always inherit, and one of them is asaba. So we're good. Everyone else, they don't need to exist at all in this study. So what do we do here? What does the spouse get when there's no kids? Good. So the spouse will get half. That's his fard. What will the mother get when there's no kids or brothers? She gets a third. And the father gets a sixth plus the rest. Now what happens here is that there's no rest, right? There's no asaba because this adds up to one full. And the father is getting half of the mother. So the father is actually inheriting half of what the mother is going to inherit, which is not the way things go in mawarith. So the father should always inherit more than the mother, or equal to each other, to say the least. So in this specific situation, the father ends up inheriting half of the mother. So what Ibn Umar al-Khattab did, he said that she gets thuluth al-baqi, the rest of what? The rest of whatever is left after the half is taken out. So she's going to get a third of what's left after the spouse gets his share, and then the father will take the rest. Asaba. Are you understanding what his fatwa was in this? So let me explain again. The normal way of it working is that the husband will get a half, she would get a third, and the father would get a sixth of the rest. Now in this equation, the father is going to get half of the mother, which is abnormal in the way of how inheritance works. So Umar al-Khattab radiallahu anhu, he put something, he put a fatwa forward, and of course he didn't do it alone. When he gave this fatwa, all the ulama of the Sahaba followed him. So Zayd ibn Thabit and Ali ibn Abi Talib, they all followed him on this fatwa, saying that the mother is going to get a third, but not from the whole inheritance. She's going to get a third of whatever is left after the half of the husband is taken out. So now these two are going to share. How much are they going to share? The other half. How much is he going to get from this half? A third of the half. And he'll get the rest. Are you understanding how this works? Okay.
He still gets more of the Father.
So he gets a bit more. So if you go to the original way of how it worked, meaning a half, a third, and the rest, then we would break this down into six. The husband would get three, the mother would get two, and the father would get one. Right? That is originally. Now after we fixed it, after Umar al-Khattab gave the fatwa, now he'll still get three, and she'll get one, and he'll get two. Is that understood? So this is called the Mas'al al-Umariya. And there's something similar to it on the other hand when if it was, so this is a husband, a lady dying, leaving a husband. Now let's just change this by changing the person who was going to pass away. Let's say that the one who died was a man. He left a wife and two parents. That's all he left. So a man died, left a wife, a mother, a father. How much does the wife get without any kids being around? No, she gets a fourth. Yeah. And then a third, and then an asaba or a baqi. So if you break this down to 12, I guess. Then third, three, four. That's what, seven? And then he gets five, right? So in other considerations of this, another one, is that he also said that she will get a third of whatever is left. She'll get a third of the three quarters that are left. That makes sense? So that's also something that he added. This is less known or less famous as the first one. The first one is much more famous and is actually how the fatwa goes till today. Here there's a difference of opinion, but this is also called Mas'al al-Umariya. The mother will get a three quarters of whatever is going to be left. Of course, these are the only situations where this would ever present itself as an issue. So what would happen if she's going to get a third of the three quarters? Just times them, she'll get a quarter of the whole thing, right? She'll get a quarter of everything. She'll get exactly as much as the wife would get. So three, and then six, which to them at the time made a bit more sense. Okay. So that's the Mas'ala al-Umariya. Mas'alatan al-Umariyatan. Not that they're extremely important, but I thought worth sharing because anyone who studies Mawarith will come by this at least once within their studies. Okay, I'm gonna continue reading to finish the chapter, and then I'll revise everything in the chapter, inshallah, with you so that everyone's memory is jogged. But I want to finish what we recited. So we arrived at وَأَرْبَعَةٌ يُعَصِّبُونَ أَخَوَاتِهِمْ, and there are four males who will universally inherit with their sisters. Al-ibnu wa ibnu al-ibni wal-akhu min al-ab wal-um wal-akhu min al-ab. So males who universally inherit with their sisters, and they are called asaba, universal inheritors. They're called asaba, meaning they universally inherit. So the sister isn't given a certain amount. As long as her brother is there, they will inherit together, and he will be the universal inheritor, and he will get twice whatever she gets, and they'll just chop up what's left. So just to make sure that you understand how this would work otherwise. So if a man passes away, leaves a wife. Yeah, he leaves a wife and a mother and a daughter. All right. So the wife would get eighth, the mother would get sixth, right? And then she would get a half. Right? That's what she's going to get, a half. That's her amount, because there's no universal inheritor with her. Right? Now, if you add to this a son, then you take this away, and this becomes asaba. They inherit the rest. Whatever is left of after you take out the eighth and the sixth, they'll just get the rest of it all together. Now, which situation will she get more? She'll get less with the asaba this time. So let's do the math. So what's a good denominator here?
There's no asaba in this case.
In this case, there's no asaba. All right. So she gets half. So let's say on 24, he gets 4. Right? 3. Sorry, I'm losing my skills in math. And he gets 4, and she gets 12. All together, when you add them up. Exactly. Why? Because we have to look for asaba. Let's say that. So if he doesn't have a son, we look for the nearest asaba. Who's the asaba after the son? If the son's not there, who's universal after? Father, right? Grandfather, right? Grandson. No one's there. We look for brothers, full brothers. No one's there. Paternal brothers. No one's there. We look for uncles. No one's there. We look for cousins. We have to find an asaba. We have to find a male inheritor who can take the rest. Right, so someone has to be there. So she gets 12 in this situation, and then there's how much? There's some left. There's like 5. There are 5 shares. They're going to sit around. You have to find someone to take them. Someone has to take them. The state will take them if there's no one there. If literally there's no one there to take. So what happens if the boy is here? So asaba with the son. So they will. Understand what happens now? So now they will share 17. Correct? They'll share 17. He will get twice what she gets. So he's not going to get 12 anymore, obviously. So you have to times this by 3. You have to do some math to get the number, but she won't get half anymore. So this is what asaba means. Now in other situations, sometimes she'll get more. In other situations, she'll sometimes get more because of the asaba being there. And without the asaba being there, she'll lose money. So it depends on the situation, the number of siblings, and who's around in the picture.
You mentioned cousins. Is there like a limit? First cousin, second cousin, third cousin?
Yeah, so first cousin. Second don't count at all.
What's a second cousin?
In Arabic, there's really no... There's nothing for it. Yeah.
So what is a second cousin? Like, I can't think of it right now, but just extend.
Like your yani.
Like my uncle's.
Yeah.
Nephew or. Mom.
So your parents' cousins, their kids, the second cousin.
Or is it my cousin's cousin?
No, your cousin's cousin, your cousin, basically. But your parents' cousins, their kids will be a second cousin.
But not the cousin of my cousin from their mom's side.
No, he's not related to you at all, probably. Unless there's some weird connection, I don't know. But usually that you wouldn't be related to them.
That wouldn't be...
No, not at all. So who are the ones who will do this? So the first one, al-ibnu, wa-ibnu al-ibni. So the son will inherently, universally inherit with their sisters. The grandson will inherit with their sisters. Full brother. This is a good example of someone who benefits, of when the lady benefits from the existence. I'll give an example in a minute. And paternal brother. So the paternal brother will do the same. And this is a good example of how sometimes... So if there's no full brother, right? If there's no full brother, then we go to the paternal brother. And he is the asaba. And the lady will get sometimes won't get it all, or get a very small amount. But if she has a brother around, then the brother is a universal inheritor, and now she will inherit with her brother. So when it comes to brothers, the lady will definitely benefit from the brother being there. I mean, they'll get more. When it comes to the son and the grandson, meaning daughters and granddaughters, they'll probably get a bit less when the son is there. But at least none of the inheritance will go outside of the family. The inheritance will all stay within the family. Okay. وَأَرْبَعَةٌ يَرِثُونَ دُونَ أَخَوَاتِهِمْ. And there are 4 males that will universally inherit alone. They won't inherit with their sisters. Like, their sisters will get nothing.
While they're alive, or...?
Yep. So males who inherit... So without their sisters. They inherit alone. وَهُمْ الأعمام وبنو الأعمام وبنو الأخي وعصبات المولى المعتق. So الأعمام, so uncles, Your uncle can be a universal inheritor. If he is his sister's, the aunts won't get anything. وَبَنُ الْأَعْمَامِ and cousins, paternal cousins. If there are no males in the family, the paternal cousin will get the asaba, but he will not share it with his sisters. وَبَنُ الْأَخِي nephews. Same thing. A nephew will inherit if there's a reason for it, if there's no one else, and he will not share it. وَعَصَبَاتُ الْمَوْلَى الْمُعْتِقِ And this is regarding if someone is freed, who's a slave, he was freed, then there's no males in his family at all, then they'll look for males in the family of the person who freed them. Of course, that doesn't really count anymore, so we don't have to study this at all, not to look at it at all. عَصَبَاتُ الْمَوْلَى الْمُعْتِقِ All right. So basically, these are some situations. These are the males who will inherit and their sisters will inherit with them. Sons, grandsons, full brothers, paternal brothers. And those are males who, if they do inherit, if they inherit, they don't always do. But if they do, they do it alone. Uncles, paternal cousins, and nephews, they will get a loan. Females, their sisters won't get anything. Now, what is the percentage of uncles inheriting? Very, 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 very rare. I won't even give an example about it. It's not even worth it. Very, very rare. If you're someone who passed away, he left literally no one but an uncle, then come to those who are specialized in this and they can help you with getting getting it all sorted out. But generally speaking, if the five people who definitely inherit are there, spouses, parents, and kids, you're good. You don't need to look anywhere else. And that's what I wanted you to learn from all this, is that someone died, you left brothers, and you left nephews and uncles. And does he have a kid? Does he have a son? Yes. Then none of that matters. None of that matters. It doesn't matter how many brothers they had. It doesn't matter. The son will take almost everything. Give the mother what her share. Give the spouse her share. Give the father his share if he's there, and then just give the rest to the kids. So if my brother passes away, I don't inherit him unless he has no kids. And unless he has no father, my dad's not here, or my grandfather's not here, I really have to wipe out all the males that are much more important than me as a brother when it comes to inheritance. So that's important for us to kind of know.
If your brother left in his will that he wants a third to go to his brother.
So because I don't inherit him, he can give me a third, because I don't inherit him. Right? Because I'm not someone who's going to inherit him. Now, if I am someone who's going to inherit him, then that's different. Then he can't give me a third. And of course, that's an issue of difference of opinion within Islam. Let's read the wasiyah part, the testimony bequests and executors. And yes?
For the optional third, could you give that to somebody who was already able to inherit?
So the jamhur is against that fully. That la wasiyah li warith, as he says, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. There's a hadith saying that you don't give wasiyah to warith. But there are other scholars who don't have a problem with that. I tend to side by the position that's somewhere in the middle, that this is circumstantial. This is a circumstantial thing, that sometimes you can and sometimes you can't, based on different the circumstances that will dictate whether that's okay or not. So I'm not fully that you can just give your inheritance to one person. I'm not on the side that you cannot ever, but rather there's more circumstances that will dictate whether it's okay or not. So let's yes.
Is there any age limit on any of this stuff? Like if someone's a 5-year-old.
So if they're doing al-hulum or doing al-hussin al-rushd, then they inherit, and the money is held on to them for them by
What if they die, the five young ones?
So what do they have? Why do they have money? So we have to know why they did they inherit money and then they died? Yeah, so then the same thing goes. So let's say a 5-year-old inherits money from his father. Of course, this is getting into like complex calculations, and then he dies, and he leaves behind him a mother, a grandfather, and siblings. Now they're going to get their share of inheritance from him, right? So they're going to get it from him as well, even though he never actually touched the money because he wasn't old enough to actually have access to it. But that money is his money and it's sitting there, so they get access to it. And that's another example. Examples, let's say someone passes away, leaves two sons, a daughter, and then he had a daughter who passed away, and now she has two children. So do those two children inherit? Of course they do. Those two children inherit. How do they inherit? We have to calculate how much the mother would inherit first. And then that inheritance will go to within their portions to her spouse and to her kids and to others. So there's like a whole, a calculation that has to be properly done in order for us to know how much the grandchildren are going to get. But they do get their rights. I mean, they're going to be given a certain amount of inheritance. Okay. I will revise all the points again. Let me just want to finish the wasiyah. That way we finish the chapter, and then we'll revise it together. وَتَجُوزُ الْوَصِيَّةُ بِالْمَعْلُومِ وَالْمَجْهُولِ. And it's acceptable for you to give a bequest or to give a wasiyah. Wasiyah is when you just you take a certain amount of your you own, and you say in my will, making a will, I want this person to take this much of my money, or to take that specifically from my assets. بِالْمَعْلُومِ وَبِالْمَجْهُولِ. It's permissible to do it by specifying something or not specifying something. So meaning I can say in my will, I would like Yusuf to have this galabiya. And that is giving a will with something that is specified. Or I can say I want Yusuf to inherit a galabiya from my galabiya. That's acceptable as well. Meaning it's not like, oh, he didn't specify, so you don't get anything. No, you get something. And that will be worked out with lawyers and the inheritors and all that stuff. But you will get something. So even if I make a give in my will, I don't specify exactly what he's going to get, he still gets something. وَالْمَوْجُودِ وَالْمَعْدُومِ. And I can make my will for you to get something that exists, like I can give you my phone, or I can say in my will that you will get whatever my trees give this summer, the summer after I die. So when I die, if I own an orchard, and like this, the summer after that, whatever my trees bring forward in terms of fruit, their use, if that's my will, then you can get that as well. Yes, so inshallah, I'll give you that, inshallah. وَهِيَ مِنَ الثُّلُثِ. And when it comes to writing your will, you can only give from a third of your wealth. You're not allowed to give more away more than a third of your wealth. It's your wealth, but you can't give away after you die more than a third of it, because it has to go. If you give it away during your life, that's a different story. So if I say, here Yusuf, here's my phone, as I'm alive, I can do whatever I want, that's my money. But if I say, when I die, I want you to have my phone. Now when I say, when I die, when I say that, which is a will, then I'm only controlling a third of my assets. Right? If I say, when I die, I want something to happen, then I'm only controlling a third of my assets. If I want to give away my assets when I'm alive, I want to give all of them away, that's my choice. That's basically me being an idiot, because I'm giving away my money and I'm still alive. How am I going to live off stuff, right? So it's not. But and the problem with, and why is that specific? Because when you say when I die, well, you're not around anymore to deal with poverty. So giving away all your wealth isn't fair to the people that are going to inherit you, who are entitled by the will of Allah Subhanahu wa Taala to some of your wealth. So you get it when I die. You're only controlling a third of your assets when you say that. فَإِنْ زَادَ وُقِفَ عَلَى إِجَازَةِ الْوَرَثَةِ. If you say more, if I say I'm going to give away more than third out when I die, it's up to the inheritors to accept that or to not accept that. إِجَازَةِ الْوَرَثَةِ has to be with the acceptance of your descendants. What is the percentage of descendants who usually allow that? Zero.
Zero.
Zero. No one. Never ever. I've never seen it before. If I do, I'll be very, very surprised. Where someone says, I want to give away a half of my wealth, and then you come and tell them, well, you can only give away a third, the other sixth is up to you if you want to allow him to give it away. Yani, almost never. Never happens. They always will take that third, that whatever is more than the third, wallahu a'lam. وَلَا تَجُوزُ الْوَصِيَّةُ لِوَارِثِ. In the Shafi'iyyah, as I explained, you can never give a wasiyah, you can't give your will to someone who's already going to inherit you. You can't say, well, I want to give half of my inheritance to my son, right? And then he's already going to inherit like most of it after you pass away. That's not fair, because that's really basically just taken away from the inheritance of others. And that's why where I see it's not okay to give a what? I'll give the example so you understand what I'm saying. And this is the situation where I agree you shouldn't be able to do that. So let's say you pass away, you leave behind you a wife, you leave a wife, you leave two daughters, and a son. So how would this work out from an inheritance perspective? How would you break it down? She gets 1/8. and Asaba. They get the rest. He will get twice their shares. So how many shares altogether here? Two daughters. The son is twice, so four shares. So four shares here and eighth here, so we can basically keep the number eight. So she'll get one, and these guys will get seven. No, we have to have four shares that to work, so we times it all by four, just to make it easy. So 32, four. I always suck when I can never do this right. So 14, and then 7 plus 7, right? Does that all add up? Yes, it does, right? So that's what. So 7 for each daughter and 14 for her. So if someone, when he passes away, he says, I want to give half of what I own to my son, he's already getting 14 out of 32. You give him another half, where is that half going from? Right, it's going away from the wife. Now the wife is not going to get, because now we're not working with 32 anymore. What are we working with? We're working with half of that, because half of it went to the son. Or let's say a third. Let's say he gives a third to the son, or a fourth to his son. Now we're going to take away a fourth from here. We're going to have 24 instead. And she's going to get an eighth of 24, not an eighth of 32. Because the son is already getting, we're just adding to him, we're just adding a lot more to him. And we're taking it away from the daughters and taking it away from the wife, and that's not okay. I don't think that's okay. What is the situation where I mean, some scholars have talked about being okay? Here's an example of something that would be okay. So someone passed away, left a mom, a wife, and a daughter. So how much did the mother get here? A sixth, right? Because there's a child. She gets an eighth. The daughter will get a half. What is going to be left at the end? So if, let's say you make this 24. 7, what's going to be left? 17. A 12. So there's 5 extra. Let's say he doesn't have asabat, or the asabat are very far away. Right? They're not an intrinsic part of the family, or there's khilaf, whether they inherit or not. If he gives wasiya, 5 shares to his daughter, I don't see it to be problematic. Meaning making sure that she has, she takes the rest of his inheritance, yeah.
Does he have to be specific? Can he just say that the rest of...
Yeah, which is what it was going to add up to at the end, yeah, which is the same thing, just worded differently, it's all the same. If he knows that this is what he's leaving behind, wallahu alam. So in this situation, yes, the Shafi'i still don't see it's okay, by the way, or the Jumhur. I'm just saying that this is the type of situation where I would see circumstantially it's okay to give a warith. I understand what I'm saying? Because I told you circumstantially I think sometimes it's acceptable. This is an example where I think it would be acceptable. Another example is not, because basically you're just ripping off the rest of the waritha.
Say you don't want to give it to a family member, you want to give your 1/3 to the charity.
Whatever you want to do, it's totally up to you. But you can only control 1/3 of your assets after you die. During your life, do what you want. If you're Yani Hatim al-Ta'i during your life, want to give away all your wealth, that's up to you. The Prophet ﷺ did Yani advise against that. And there are legal ways, if you are terminally ill, for you not to be able to do that. And we talked about that a bit before. So if you're terminally ill, divorcing your wife and giving away your wealth is not permissible. You can't do it anymore. Like you sucked all your life, and now you're going to die, and you want to be good, so you divorce your wife, and you give away your money. No. You're amartak, and you give away 1/3, you're dying. You're not going to rip off all of your descendants after you die. If you raised a bunch of brats, that's yani your fault to begin with. Okay. وَلَا تَجُوزُ الْوَصِيَّةُ لِوَارِثِ إِلَّا أَنْ يُجِيزَهَا بَاقِ الْوَرَثَةِ So it's not acceptable for you to give a wasiyah to someone who's inheriting, unless the rest of the inheritors are okay with it. So the Shafi'iyya have this condition, and that's why I'm okay with it being said, because the Shafi'iyya have an exception. They say if the rest of the inheritors are okay with you giving one of the inheritors more, and what is the percentage of that happening? And also zero. Like
it can get coerced, like pressured, like...
Yeah, exactly.
Come on.
So, but people, yeah, again, it's usually only when it's the women, when you're just pressuring women. It only works when the brother pressures the sister not to take her part of the waritha, which sucks and is disgusting and it shouldn't happen, but it happens anyway. But generally speaking, If the rest of the inheritors are okay with their father, for example, to give one of the kids a bit more, then that's fine. So as long as, so since the Shafi'iyya see an exception acceptable, that's why I'm okay with certain other exceptions. The example I gave you, I don't think the wife or the mother would find it problematic that the daughter got a bit more. Right? They would be fine with the daughter. You would just have to talk to the asaba if there's asaba around. What happens if there's no asaba at all? And it's going to the state, then all that would have to happen, and for order for the girl to take the rest, is the father write it in the will, and the mother and the wife be okay with it for the Shafi'iyya. So there are ways for you to write your will and give it to someone who's inheriting. It's just for the Shafi'iyya, you have to make sure that the rest of the inheritors are okay with the actual decision. وتصح الوصية من كل بالغ عاقل لكل متملك وفي سبيل الله تعالى. And it's acceptable, the will is acceptable, it's permissible to be given from someone who is a baligh aqil, who is sane and who is old enough to own, to make this decision. So for the example that I was given, let's say a 5 or a 6 year old passed away. Could a 6 year old put something in his will? No, because he's not baligh, he didn't reach the age of maturity, so he can't make that decision yet. Right? لِكُلِّ مُتَمَلِّكٍ. And you can give a part of your will to those who are capable of ownership, for those who can actually own wealth or own assets. If they can't own anything, then you can't give them a will. So you can't give your will, for example, and this is what he meant here, Abu Shuja rahmatullah alayh, is that you can't give your will to a slave because he can't own anything yet. So you have to hold on to it until they're freed. وَفِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ تَعَالَى. You can do it for charity, for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. وَتَصِحُّ الْوَصِيَّةُ إلى من اجتمعت فيه خمس خصال. And wasiyah meaning for you to give, this is not giving a will, this is putting someone responsible for your assets and your wealth, to take care of your money after you, or to take care of children who are going to own money after you pass away. So what do you do? Who do you give it to? You give it to everyone who has to have five characteristics. Islam, has to be a Muslim. Al-Bulugh, they have to have age of maturity. Al-Aql, they have to be sane. Al-Hurriya, they have to be free, can't be a slave. And Al-Amanah, they have to be trustworthy. This is not regarding who you give your will to. This is who you're putting the will in whose hands. I mean, I'm going to pass away. Who's going to take care of my will? So I have to look for someone who has these five conditions. They have to be Muslim, they have to be age of maturity, sane, free, and they have to be trustworthy so that they can take forward this will, because it's very easy for wills to be distorted or to be manipulated after someone.
Is that a Muslim lawyer?
For Shafi'iyya, you do. Yeah, but again, this is an old madhab. There's really no specific evidence to support this. Yani, within the Sharia, this is the this is more mantiq. I mean, this is more just common sense of the scholars at the time. But here, because all lawyers are bound by the same law, it doesn't make a difference really. But it's probably better that you do it by a Muslim lawyer who understands how these things work. Okay, so let's just do a recap of what we talked about. Next time we'll start Kitab al-Nikah. We'll talk about the marriage. We'll start something new. Abdullah's already, he's prepared. He can't wait for me to start talking about this. So, yeah.
I was wondering, the chapter doesn't really say anything about non-Muslims and Muslims.
It did. You just weren't here last time. It did. So, أَهْلُ مِلَّتَيْنِ. We don't, the Jumhur is not okay for Muslims to inherit non-Muslims or non-Muslims to inherit Muslims. Who differed on that? Like, who are the scholars who differ on that? Mu'adh ibn Jabal radiyallahu anhu, al-Hasan al-Basri, Muhammad ibn Hanafiyya, wa Masruq. These are the four or five scholars. There's another one, I can't remember the fifth guy. Five scholars of the Sahaba and Tabi'een who did not see a problem in Muslims inheriting from non-Muslims or non-Muslims inheriting from Muslims. But the Jumhur sees it not to be permissible. Wallahu a'lam, the Jumhur stance is based on animosity, meaning at a time of war, a time where Muslims and non-Muslims are on opposite sides of the rails and people are fighting. And wallahu a'lam, the other scholars who said it was okay, we're looking at it because all four of them, by the way, or five of them, what they have in common is that they lived in communities where there were Muslims and non-Muslims living in the same city, and they were they visited each other, and people would accept Islam from this family and the father. So they gave this fatwa, like Al-Hasan al-Basri rahmatullah alayhi, or Mu'adh ibn Jabal, who went and lived in Yemen for a while. So yeah, that is something that there is a fatwa for it by people of great knowledge. Okay, yes.
So the will itself, does that have to be written or can it be spoken?
It can be written, it can be verbalized, it could have witnesses, it can be without witnesses, it can be your signature. Best thing is that it's written and signed, and if there's witnesses, even better. Just to solidify it.
And your orchards also, I'm getting them.
We have a lot of tape. Yeah, my orchards are yours, inshallah, once I die. I don't have any orchards, but inshallah, yani, if I do, they'll be useless, inshallah, once I pass away. So let's talk about, just kind of a quick recap. So, always, that's all I'm going to write. Always inherit. Right, parents? Father and mother, spouse, husband and wife, children, son and daughter. Now, so these guys will always inherit. There is no situation where these guys will never not inherit. And actually, if you have all of them, you don't need to look outside. If you have these guys, you don't need to ask about the rest of the family. No one cares if he has 15 brothers or 100 brothers or sisters, if he has these people alive. How much does the father get or the mother get? So one of two things, either a sixth, if there are children or brothers, or a third. What does the father get?
Uh-huh.
Either a sixth or asaba. Never forget that, all right? Never forget the father is the only person. He's the only person within all the different people who inherit who is someone who is given a certain number and is also at the same time. Because people who inherit are one of two things. Either you are given a percentage, like here a sixth, an eighth, a fourth, a half, two-thirds, whatever, you're given a number, or you're asaba. You just take the rest. You just clean the table. So the father is the only one, and that's the importance of the fathers and how this all works, is that he can be given a percentage. You'll always give him a percentage, and sometimes you'll take the rest as well, depending on the situation. Of course, depending on the situation. It's not every time you see a father, you have to take the rest. No, there's specific situations. Okay, spouses, husband, how much does the husband get? Worst case scenario, you'll get a fourth of what your wife owns. So be give her money. Give her money, it's okay, you're going to get it back, inshallah. And if she doesn't have kids, what do you get? Yeah, you inherit that. You take half of what she owns. A wife, what does she get? An eighth if there are kids, and a quarter, as you said, if there are not any. So a half, basically, of what the husband. What does the daughter get? If she's alone, she'll get a half. And the son is asaba. And he's the example of asaba with his sister. So make sure his sister gets with him. Like you'll just get twice the amount that she gets. Okay. All right. I'm not going to talk about who doesn't inherit at all, but I'll quickly remind you. It's usually slaves, people who killed the deceased. If you killed the deceased, you're not going to inherit them. Those who commit apostasy, for the majority of scholars. And if there are two religions, like I said, for the majority of scholars, but there are different exceptions.
So if it's just a husband and daughter, they each get a half and that's it?
Yeah, so a husband, if there's only a husband and a daughter, then they split it right down the middle. But what happens if there's a father? Okay. See, this is what you have to think. You're not thinking. See, you saying that means I didn't teach you well. Now you just proven I didn't teach you well. So he left. She left a husband and a daughter. First of all, how much does a husband get when there's a kid involved? Does he get a half? So he doesn't get a half. He gets a quarter anyway. That's not my problem. Half. Who's asaba? There has to be asaba. You have to look for them. So you start with the son. Is there a son? There's no son. Okay, is there a grandson? There's no grandson. Is there a father? There's no father. Grandfather? No grandfather. Is there a paternal brother? A full brother? No. A paternal brother? No. An uncle? This is what the second thing is going to be. Who are the universal inheritors? Asabat. Who will take the rest? See, this is a problematic calculation. We're missing someone here. We have to find someone who can inherit the rest. So let's go through the list. Al-Asabat, Al-Ibn. This is prioritized with the most important. So the son is here, you don't care. Khalas, the son is here. All right, you don't look. Grandson. If grandson is there, then you don't look. Then after that, you move to the father. Like I said, he's the only one who gets both this and this. Grandfather, his dad. أنت ومالك لأبيك. You and what you own is your dad's at the end. You're a part of him anyway, so. ثم الأخ للأب والأم. And then full brother. And then paternal brother. ثم ابن الأخ للأب والأم ثم ابن الأخ للأب. Yeah, no, am I right? Yes, I'm right, yep. Yeah. Then full nephew. Paternal nephew. Uncle.
So, uncle almost never inherits, is what you're saying, right? Those guys will almost never.
Yeah, hold on for a moment. Let me prove you wrong.
If they're, like, all these guys have to be dead for the
Let me prove you wrong. So this guy here, this poor guy here, this poor lady, she died. She left a husband, a daughter, and one full nephew. Are there no families like that? No families like that. Or just an uncle. She came from a very, let me give you an example. She came from a very simple family. Her father had one brother. Her father died a long time ago. She lives with her uncle for a while. She's an only child, right? They don't know anything else about their family. She dies, she leaves a husband and a daughter, and that uncle, right? So that uncle now is Asaba. Yeah, he takes it all. Now the question is he a guy who, is he a male who inherits with his sisters or without his sisters? We just said it.
Without,
yeah, so he doesn't, if there's a sister, meaning she could be, this lady who died, she could, her family could be, she has a father, an uncle, and 15 aunts, right? It doesn't matter. If she doesn't have these guys, she'll make it down to the uncle, or make it down to a cousin.
If during the process of finding out the numbers, a son was born, does that son get...
What do you mean a son was born?
So like...
If she's dead, how is she going to give birth?
No, like if the guy was dead.
Oh, so if the... Yeah. No, so this is a different story altogether. If he dies and leaves a pregnant wife, that's a whole different calculation now. Right? So this is a whole different calculation. If he left a pregnant wife when he died, everything changes. Now we treat that fetus as a full human being. Right? And we hold on to the money. The money stays until the kid is born full, in full health. If he's not born in full health, that money is taken back and we do the calculation as if there was no kid to begin with. This is where things become complex. If he's born in full health, that money becomes his. If he dies later on, then he, those who inherit him. So in a sense, it becomes a bit complicated if he leaves a pregnant wife. But it still works out, yes?
Does it matter how far along?
Nope, doesn't matter. As long as we know that she's pregnant.
The wife might need like support, or like from the husband. Well, might be supporting the wife. Like,
oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
9 months to have any support.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. No, if that's a different thing. She's gonna get the support from his wealth throughout her pregnancy, outside of inheritance. And that'll be taken out before we even talk about the inheritance. She'll get that immediately. Yeah. So these are the guys who are asabat. All right, these are important. This is an important thing to know. Also about universal inheritors. They take it all. Where do problems come up most in terms of these things? Siblings. Siblings are the biggest problem when it comes to inheritance. your brother passes away, and you for some reason you feel that you're entitled to some of his wealth after he passed away, even though he left a number of sons and daughters. So he left a big family. For some reason, siblings feel entitled to some of the wealth of their siblings, even though they don't get any of it. The father will get, the mother will get, the spouse, and then the kids, and you're completely left out as a sibling from your brother's wealth. And it's problematic, especially if their brother was wealthy. So yeah, he was a millionaire. He left a lot of money. So, you know, everyone's going to get a good share. There's no reason to be greedy. I know I used to work with the brother a lot. It was my idea to begin with, and he just never gave me. And he ripped me off. He bought this from me back in the day. And I lent him like $500 like 50 years ago, and he never paid me back. Now he used it for this. So the problems begin from that. The siblings. Siblings are the biggest problem when it comes to inheritance, just from a practical perspective. Why is it that the husband is getting more than the wife, and the son is getting twice what the daughter gets, and the father is always getting more than the mother? What is the reason for this in Islam? Why is it that we're always giving the male more than we give the female? Is this just unjust, or is there a wisdom behind it? Well, basically, just to make this very simple, it's looked at from two angles. Number one, from a family perspective, a rahim, which is the womb, will bring people together, but it's the male's line that is held on, meaning it's the male's line that will be preserved throughout history. The female's line is not preserved throughout history, meaning you know who you're who you're related to through your mother's genes, but the line is not preserved through the mother, it's preserved through the father. If I ask you your name, you can give me your name, the name of your dad, the name of your granddad, and that last name. You're not going to give me your mother's last name or through your mother. And the preservation of lineages and heritages through males and through men is why the Asabat are all males. I mean, those who universally inherit are the males, because they hold on to the family. Because the family name is taken through males, not through females. And it actually works, it's much more practical that way. It's much more practical for it to happen that way. If the inheritor was going to be the female, well, she takes it all, and then she marries someone, the kids aren't going to be named after her, they're named after him. And now the man who lived all his life and worked, all his wealth are going to those who are not carrying his last name, not carrying his lineage to begin with. And that isn't fair for people who put. So that's one. Number two, well, actually there's three things, but the two are the two main ones, is that men are legally and religiously responsible for their female counterparts. So the brother is legally and religiously responsible for the financial well-being of his sister. He is religiously and legally responsible to take care of her with his own wealth, not even with her wealth. I mean, he doesn't.